Back along the left wing and ahead to Orlov. Stopped to neutralize. Ahead now to Boyd, who cuts in a left circle and tried to get the shot away and then got himself tangled up. A shot in front, and Vrana scores! The puck back into the slot, and Jacob Vrana with 17:16 to go on the first makes it 1-0 Washington.
Welcome into another edition of Unleashing Fury here on FoxSportsRichmond.com. I'm your host, Jordan Bondurant. Coming up on the show, Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network joins me, and you definitely don't want to miss that. John Walton, the play-by-play voice of the Caps, with the call of that Jacob Vrana goal in the open. That goal came in the Washington Capitals 4-2 victory over the Edmonton Oilers on November the 5th. Vrana now with 4 goals on the young season, and as you'll hear in my interview with Ben Raby later, Vrana has been one of those guys that's really risen to the occasion for the Caps in this first Baker's Dozen games. Let's take you through the first month of the season, as the debut episode of this show is more of a season preview and recap of the Caps run to the Stanley Cup. In case you didn't hear episode 1 along with my interview with Michael Jenkins of NBC Sports Washington, definitely take a few minutes and go back and listen. I think it's definitely well worth your time. But looking back, the big news item that nearly overshadowed the start of the season was the 20-game suspension of Tom Wilson handed down by the NHL for a preseason hit on Oscar Sundquist of the St. Louis Blues. News of the suspension broke mere hours before the Capitals raised their first Stanley Cup championship banner to the rafters of Capital One Arena, and it was all the talk on DC Sports Talk Radio that afternoon. The length of the suspension was what really made this such a newsworthy item. Obviously, a suspension for Wilson was expected for the hit, but if you listen back to any number of analysts or read articles on the subject, many thought Wilson would be gone for anywhere from 7 to 10 games. But you'll see from even NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman that Wilson's track record of being one of the more quote-unquote dirty hitters in the league, that this last offense seemed to be the straw that broke the camel's back and a message needed to be sent. Wilson, who had just signed a new contract over the summer, was set to lose over $1 million in salary because of the suspension, and I think more importantly than losing out on the money, Wilson had been set to lose around a quarter of the season in terms of ice time and production, which obviously had Coach Todd Reirden scrambling to try and see how we could bridge the gap in terms of filling his absence. But Tom appealed the suspension and ultimately got it reduced to 17 games, but Commissioner Bettman denied the reduction, again, looking to send a message to the 24-year-old winger, obviously being suspended in the playoffs last year and having some questionable hits on guys throughout the Caps' run to the Stanley Cup. And even in the regular season and in years prior, he's just sort of had that reputation of just the guy as a headhunter, if you will. But since then, Wilson has met with an independent arbiter to get the suspension reduced once again, and we'll see what happens. In fact, if it's reduced to 17 games, we could see Wilson back on the rink for the game in Winnipeg on November 14th. But if not, he'll be eligible to return for the Caps game against the Chicago Blackhawks on November 21st. So when Wilson does come back, will it be message received? That is the $64,000 question. How does a guy whose main aspect of his game is his ability to deliver punishing hits on the opposition respond? Will we see him be more conservative in that regard? Because one has to think that now that the league has handed down a 20-game suspension, any new offense reviewed by the NHL's Department of Player Safety could ultimately result in a ban of similar or longer length. And for a guy so young, a guy that the Caps organization has clearly invested millions of dollars for the near future, you would hate to see him waste an opportunity to continue being a major contributor to future championship teams. And, you want to see him sort of get rid of that reputation of being a dirty player. Obviously, Brad Marchand of the Boston Bruins has sort of come to be another one of those guys that seems to get on the nerves of a lot of fans and seems to draw a lot of ire from opposing fan bases. But now, seeing beyond that, beyond the Tom Wilson suspension, the team as a whole has gotten off to a fairly decent start to the season. As of this recording, they've amassed 6 wins, 4 regulation losses, 3 overtime losses, which is good for 15 points in third place in the Metropolitan Division. Technically, it's a tie for second with like 3 other teams. But, you know, if you check the standings, it does have them listed as like third place in the division. And interestingly enough, just 5 points separates first place, which happens to be, surprisingly enough, the New York Islanders, and last place in the division at this point. And, you know, as things move forward, you'll start to see the contenders separate themselves from the pretenders. And one has to think that the Caps will ultimately put themselves being a contender. This just recapping some of these games that I thought stood out. Obviously, the season opener against Boston was probably about as solid a performance as you'll probably want out of the Caps. I was at that game in person at Capital One Arena. I took my girlfriend and I upgraded our seats, and we had just this incredible view of the Stanley Cup banner as it went up into the rafters, and just being in that arena and taking in the atmosphere created by the fans. It was just electric. From the time we sat down to the end of the game, it was just incredible. And even the performance on the ice dictated the night, and it definitely capitalized on a ton of excitement in that building as the new season was upon us. Getting to see the Stanley Cup in person was just, it was so cool. And, you know, definitely a night I will never forget, and I'm sure a lot of other Caps fans will never forget. Moving on, you know, expanding more on the game itself. Typically in games like that, the team raising the banner tends to come out fairly flat due to the pomp and circumstance of the ceremony, a slight delay in the start of the game due to the ceremony. But yet you saw from the outset, they scored early. They made Tuukka Rask uncomfortable, and, you know, Boston just seemed to come out flat. They didn't look ready for that game in particular. I don't know what seemed to be the issue, but obviously it seemed that the Caps had done their homework essentially, or, you know, just had been really, you know, getting ready for the season opener, knew what kind of game this would be, and definitely rose to the occasion. But looking at other games, their roughest outing, I thought, was against the New Jersey Devils on October 11th. It wasn't the effort that you expected or that you would think that they wanted to give backup goalie Phoenix Copley, who made his Caps and season debut. Obviously getting shut out 6-0 is never fun. And, you know, they would find ways to rebound. But, you know, that game in particular definitely stood out to me at least as sort of the worst game of the season so far. And, you know, they haven't been shut out since, if I'm not mistaken. So you definitely like to see that, you know, the offense continues to be productive and at least keep them in games for the most part. And so you would think that they have learned from that game in particular. They will definitely be seeing more of the Devils as the season goes on, and the Devils have proven themselves to be one of those teams to watch, especially in the Metro Division and in the Eastern Conference. I really don't know if any team is going to catch Tampa in terms of the standings. They might very well could win the President's Trophy, but as Caps fans know, while the President's Trophy for having the best record in the regular season is nice, it really comes down to that Stanley Cup. And, you know, now that the Caps have had that taste, I really don't think that they don't want to taste that once again. And so, you know, you've seen it throughout these first 13 games that, you know, they're working really hard, that they know what they're doing. They've already sort of surpassed, you know, where they were at this point last year. They came out super flat to start the season last year. And so to come back this year, playing around 500. You know, it could be better, and it definitely could be worse. As of this recording, the Blackhawks had not had a very good start to the season, and they fired their longtime head coach, Joel Quenneville, who led them to 3 Stanley Cups. So, you know, there, and even in Los Angeles, you've seen John Stevens get canned. So, you know, I like that in the NHL, it's not like in other sports where, you know, even in football, in the NFL, if a team starts off 2-5 or 3-6 or something like that, there might be some grumblings, but more often than not, if it looks like that the team in the NFL is going to be able to salvage a couple more wins, they may not pull the trigger on letting a head coach go, unless you're Cleveland, obviously. But in the NHL, these organizations, they want to win now, and they are not going to stand for mediocrity, even if it means showing a head coach the door and just, you know, accepting that this season is over from the onset. But, you know, I like that, you know, the win now mentality has always been in the NHL, and that sort of extends to the front office and how they handle coaching. And if it doesn't look like a coach is living up to expectations, or that the team, you know, isn't responding to a new head coach, or even, you know, a longtime head coach, you know, they don't hesitate to let a guy go and start over and look for someone else that can at least try and salvage some victories. But, you know, aside from this tangent, you know, I thought that the team showed some resiliency, especially against their game against the Florida Panthers, overcoming a 3-goal deficit to salvage a point. They did lose in the shootout in that game, but, you know, it seemed after that first period being down 4-1 that, you know, they could have been in some trouble for that game at least. But they obviously scored 3 goals in the second and made a game of it, ended up losing in the shootout. Still got a point. So, you know, in terms of the standings, which you don't want to put too much emphasis on at this point in the season, is the standings, unless obviously they're really struggling. But for a team like Washington that's, you know, 2 games over 500 right now, you know, being where they are in the standings and knowing how tight the division is right now, you tend to not really think too much about the standings and, you know, any sort of playoffs. Obviously, we're still an eighth of the season in, so there isn't much you can really say to, or even prognosticate, in order to, you know, build up any optimism or anything like that. That, you know, the cliche is take it one game at a time, and that's obviously what needs to happen, at least until you get into January, when, you know, at that point you're starting to approach the midpoint of the season, and so you kind of have to look at what you have and sort of figure out, okay, maybe we're not going to be in the hunt this year, or maybe as the trade deadline approaches, what do we need to do to maybe make a trade for a key player and, you know, reassure the lineup and hopefully put the team in the best position possible to get the best seed possible, and then start that run to another Stanley Cup. But overall, in terms of the team performance, there have been plenty of things to like. Among other things, the power play, which continues to be one of the best power plays in the league in terms of conversion on the man advantage, and then a fair amount of things that you'd like to see improve upon from the Cats. And, you know, I think you can tell when the team is sloppy. When they come out flat, they turn the puck over. They don't necessarily handle the puck with care, especially when they're trying to generate a rush or get the forecheck going. You know, they turn the puck over a lot in their defensive zone, or they will make a bad pass in the neutral zone, which generates a turnover, and then they're back on their heels, and then, you know, it just kind of snowballs from there. But, you know, I think I think overall, you know, there are good things. There's some iffy things, some things that they need to improve on. But I would say, you know, it's been a good start to the season. I've been pretty pleased with what I've seen so far, and I'm definitely excited for what is to come from these guys. And you know, hopefully, you know, they can find that, string together some wins, get that first winning streak of the season. The game, the victory against Edmonton, snapped their first losing streak of the season. So, you know, you can either streak in the in one way, you can streak in the winning way, and then if you streak in the losing way, that's how trouble starts. So I think as they move forward, you know, it's okay to win one, lose one, but you definitely want to see them start to win 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5 games, that sort of thing. Or even if they do lose 2 games, but you don't want to see them go on a 3, 4, 5, 6 game losing streak, because that's really how you start to lose ground in terms of the standings when it really starts to matter, especially in the months of February and March coming down the stretch. But coming up, I'll get you set for the slate of games on the horizon as the 2018-19 season rolls on. But in the meantime, I want to let you listen to my interview with Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network. And on the other side, I'll give you some takeaways from that interview and, like I said, get you set for the remainder of the games coming up here in the month of November. So let's turn it over to that interview with Ben Raby. Okay, joining me now is Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network. You can hear him from inside Capital One Arena when the Caps are at home, and when the team's on the road, you can hear him in studio pregame, in-game, intermissions, and postgame. And you can also find him on Twitter at BenRaby31. Ben, welcome to Unleashing Fury.
Good to be with you, Jordan.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. We'll just jump right into it. Right off the bat, we're 13 games in, almost three quarters of the way through Tom Wilson's 20-game suspension. I understand he's put in one last-ditch appeal to get the suspension reduced to 17 games, which could see him back on the ice by the time the team hits Winnipeg. So what's the latest in terms of this final last-ditch appeal? What have you heard? Any timetable for when we can expect a decision?
And these decisions don't come back especially quick. That's not unique to Tom Wilson. That's just sort of the way these things unfold, which is, I guess, on the one hand, you could say a good thing. They're taken seriously. They're reviewed seriously. A lot of time goes into them. But, yeah, just for context, when you reference, you know, another potential last-ditch attempt to get it reduced here, the original appeal was heard and denied by Commissioner Gary Bettman in mid-October, and then just last week on Halloween, October 31st, if you prefer, he had the right to meet with a third-party arbitrator, which is what he did, and that's the decision we're now waiting for at this point. So if it is upheld, if it is 20 games, we'll look forward to seeing Tom Wilson back November 21 against Chicago. And if by chance it is reduced by a few games, surely he'll be a welcome addition whenever he is back in the Capitals lineup.
When Tom does come back, whether it's sooner or Thanksgiving Eve against the Blackhawks, what can we expect to see from him in terms of, you know, his on-ice performance?
When he comes back, as far as what to expect, you know, it's almost a shame that the suspension has taken over all the Tom Wilson narrative. It's easy to forget that coming into the regular season, expectations were, understandably pretty high for what Tom could potentially do this year after we saw him, you know, fit in seamlessly last season on the top line with Kuznetsov and Ovechkin. He had career highs across the board, 14 goals, 35 points. I think there was some thought if he had been available for this entire season, maybe he could potentially flirt with a 20-goal season for the first time in his career. So I would look forward to when he comes back. You know, everyone's going to be paying attention to how he handles himself and the physicality and, Is he going to do things differently as far as that aspect of his game? I think lost in the shuffle, it might be easy to forget, hey, you know what, when Tom Wilson comes back, you're going to be getting a proven offensive contributor, someone who could potentially aid a penalty kill unit, which has had a sluggish start to the season, keeping in mind that Tom Wilson's a key cog to the Capitals' penalty kill. So I think there's quite a few areas that we'll look forward to seeing him, you know, make an impact in. The question is, how quickly upon his return will he be able to make that impact? And what I mean by that is, it's understandable if you miss the first quarter of the season and everyone else is playing at a certain pace, it might take a few games for Tom to eventually catch up and feel he has his legs under him. So all that being said, Jordan, I would look forward really at the start of December to see what Tom Wilson has in store in what is already his sixth NHL campaign. I think he'd probably use the first few games there at the end of November just to get the timing back, and maybe his ice time won't, you know, be, you know, what we've come to expect from him. I think he might be eased into it a little bit in late November, but really by the time you get to December, you know, you should be raring to go.
And just looking at the team as a whole with Wilson out, you've seen Coach Todd Reirden doing what he can with these line pairings to try and bridge the gap. Obviously, you know, his physicality cannot be sort of matched or imitated, but, you know, he's tried to mix things up and give guys opportunities with additional ice time or playing a line up or just, you know, mixing and matching the pairings and everything. In that regard, who are some of the guys who you think have sort of taken advantage of these opportunities while Tom has been out?
Yeah, I really like the play for much of the season of Jacob Vrana, who maybe doesn't have the numbers as some of the headliners, the Ovechkins, the Kuznetsovs, the Oshies, the Backstroms, the Carlsons. But I have found Jacob Vrana's play to be pretty consistent. There's still a few areas he'd probably like to tidy up. He was certainly turnover happy on Saturday night in the homestand opener against the Dallas Stars. So it hasn't been flawless from Vrana, but I've been impressed with his play as a whole. He's played mostly the first month of the year with Backstrom and Oshie. But when he was given an opportunity to move up the depth chart, you talk about taking advantage of an opening without Tom Wilson. Vrana didn't look out of place when he skated on the top line with Kuznetsov and Ovechkin. I thought he earned that opportunity, and I thought for the most part he took advantage of it. We saw going into the Edmonton game a change was made, and Dmitry Yashkin, someone else who's been given an opportunity with Wilson out. You wonder even if Wilson had never been suspended, if they would have ever claimed Dmitry Yashkin. Keep in mind they claimed him only after the incident with Tom Wilson leading into the season opener. So certainly those are two names in Yashkin and Vrana who have had an opportunity in front of them, and, you know, Yashkin, it's been slowly, but it's slowly been coming along. I feel he's kind of been getting better every game he's been in the lineup, so certainly those are two guys, and we'll see once Wilson comes back where that leaves Yashkin, but certainly a guy who Todd Reirden has been impressed with as far as getting better each and every game since his debut.
And looking at goalie, Braden Holtby has had a decent start to the year. He's 4-3-2 with a 3.62 goals against average. And Phoenix Copley has been settling into the backup role. I know Phoenix hasn't had a ton of NHL experience prior to this season, and even now he's only appeared in three games. But at this point, what are your thoughts on Copley's game in net, and do you feel he's sort of met expectations in these early stages of the season?
Yeah, I would still like to see a little bit of a larger sample size from Copley, and that's no fault of his own. That's just the reality of the season still being fairly young. You know, at the time of this recording, we were preparing to see him on Monday night against the Edmonton Oilers, so it'll be his first home start in a Capitals uniform, so that's a nice opportunity for him. And, you know, hopefully he could build off of the shootout win he had a couple of weeks ago against Calgary. And really, if you throw out the window that his first game of the year, the blowout loss against the New Jersey Devils, he's handled himself pretty well. You know, that being said, like I said, he has the one win, but, you know, he just hasn't had a whole lot of opportunity. You know, the reality of a backup goalie this early in the season, in which there haven't been too many back-to-back situations where you'd think you might see a backup goalie play. So I certainly look forward to seeing the sample size grow. You know, he's proven, you know, he's paid his dues. He's 26 years old, many years in the minor leagues. He's at the very least earned the opportunity to prove his worth in the NHL. And to that end, you know, hopefully for his benefit, he does get the opportunities here in the weeks and months ahead.
And for him to learn from a guy like Braden Holtby, who, you know, has, you know, he's been a stud in every sense of the word over the course of his career, you know, what's that got to do for his confidence and even, you know, getting the chance to practice alongside Braden and sort of maybe, you know, pick his brain a little bit in the locker room?
Yeah, no doubt. Learning and certainly watching one of the best. And, you know, it's a good relationship they have and certainly an example of that. A few weeks ago, we saw when Phoenix Copley earned that first career win. You may have seen on the highlights that as the whole bench emptied after the shootout win and they all skated towards Phoenix Copley to share high fives and congratulations, Holtby sort of excused himself from the pile and he went down to the other end of the ice to grab the game puck, you know, so that Phoenix Copley would have that as a souvenir and a memento. And I thought that was a really neat gesture from Braden Holtby, something he didn't necessarily have to go out of his way to do, but it just showed that he had an appreciation for watching his younger teammate pick up a milestone win. And I thought that was a pretty cool thing that Braden did on Copley's behalf. And, you know, a small snippet of a pretty strong 1-2 tandem as far as the relationship goes as well.
And, yeah, and you know, it's interesting because obviously Holtby isn't going anywhere anytime soon, you hope at least. And, you know, that backup role was filled for so long by Philip Grubauer, so now they're kind of just starting fresh, and they have those goalie prospects down in Hershey. So how do you sort of see them approaching this position in terms of just being Braden Holtby's backup? And, you know, do you think at some point they might start when these prospects are ready, maybe switching guys out, giving other guys an opportunity to get some NHL time?
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly looking down the line, but ultimately, Ilya Samsonov will be given an opportunity. Again, this could still be years down the line, but as a first-round pick in 2015, a very high-end prospect, somebody who has had a nice start to his career as a prospect. You know, he's impressed in the Continental Hockey League overseas, the World Juniors, as far as Ilya Samsonov is concerned. And now just starting to get his feet wet, and this is his first full season in North America. You know, he'll handle the bulk of the games in Hershey this year, along with Vitek Vanacek. But certainly down the line, Samsonov will get a good opportunity, a good look. Again, without looking too far ahead, Holtby still has 2 years remaining on his contract. And Phoenix Copley, you know, he has 1 year remaining on his deal. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, go too far into prediction land here right now. But certainly, you know, there is maybe an opportunity for Samsonov to start to get his feet wet at the NHL level next season, perhaps as a backup to Holtby. And to sort of get his feet wet like that. If you think back to Holtby's start of his tenure with the Capitals, you know, he made relief appearances. He started as a backup to whether it was Varlamov or Neubert or Thomas Vokoun very briefly. You know, he wasn't just thrown into the fire as a starter, Holtby. He paid his dues in the minors and then with a few appearances and relief as a backup at the NHL level. So potentially that's what could be in store for Samsonov again. Still a little while away, but as far as Phoenix Copley for this season anyways, it would seem he would be the appropriate placeholder for now as Samsonov gets those games and gets the volume up in Hershey.
Well, the Caps as a whole currently sit fifth place in the Metropolitan Division with 13 points. I know early on you try not to look at the standings because, you know, you can go on a streak you know, at any point in the season and make up ground, and especially early on you try not to really think about it too much as teams find their rhythm. For Washington, playing near 500 hockey at the beginning of the season, is that sort of where you expected them to be, you know, just plugging right along early on?
I would think collectively among the Capitals brass, if you ask any of them, they would probably like to be a little ahead of where they are right now, just as far as, you know, being a little bit further away from 500 level. That being said, I think they could certainly look to where they were a year ago. They are ahead of last year's pace, and certainly we all know how that ended up. So, you know, I don't think there's any panic or anything like that setting in, but I think it would be nice here as November gets going in earnest if they could start to reel off a few wins. You know, again, at the time of this recording, they're still seeking that elusive first winning streak. To a man, they acknowledge that they've been an inconsistent bunch. At times, they look like the Stanley Cup champions that they were a year ago, but at other times, like Saturday night against Dallas or last Thursday in Montreal, you know, they've proven to be sloppy with the puck. They've had issues with puck management. They've been turnover prone. A few areas like that that, you know, they would look to clean up, certainly, moving forward here. But, you know, to your point, season is young and a lot of racetrack left for them to iron out a few so-called issues.
Looking ahead to this stretch of schedule, the Cats finish out this five-game homestand before heading back out west for three games and then another return trip to Montreal, then three of their final five games in November at home. How important is it now for Washington to make the most of getting that home cooking at Capital One Arena?
Yeah, a home-heavy schedule and also just a game-heavy schedule. It's a busy month of November. I believe right now they're in a stretch of 14 games over a 27-night stretch. And not to make excuses on the Capitals' behalf, but when we talk about, you know, they've had a little bit of a slow start based on their high expectations, they point to an unorthodox schedule that they had in October, which included at one point, a five-day layoff between games. In another instance, they had 4 days between games. Here in November, it's basically, you know, you look at this homestand, it's every other day, so a chance for them to, you know, should they build some momentum, certainly an opportunity to quickly be able to build off of it. The road trip you referenced, though, in mid-November, Minnesota and Winnipeg back-to-back, Colorado, and then Montreal a couple of nights after that. We saw the challenge the Canadiens posed last week up at the Bell Center. That won't be an easy four-game road trip. So all that being said, perhaps even more important, if you could place more importance on some of those home games for a chance to take advantage of those, because certainly that mid-November road trip, that'll be some tough sledding. That'll be some big boy hockey they've got coming up after this first homestand here.
Yeah, and you know, they talk about sort of how they typically, when they go out west for these road trips, that they may not perform all that well, or I think it's more sort of the Pacific Division road trip that they take at some point. You know, what is it about getting out west that sort of gives them the troubles, or, you know, poses any sort of opposition for them?
Yeah, certainly the opposition, and on that road trip in particular, there aren't too many lightweights in there. I think you can make a case there are no lightweights as they will prepare to go to Minnesota. Bruce Boudreau has them playing very well after a sluggish start to the year. And the Winnipeg Jets, you know, as a second of back-to-back, so that'll be a tough challenge and a Stanley Cup contender right there. And then Denver, as far as going to Colorado, you know, you take into consideration, you know, whether it's the time zone difference, the thin air right there, it's a very fast team, you know, they'll make you work the Avalanche, and, you know, they're off to a very good start after clinching a playoff spot last year on the final day of the regular season. They're right up there with Nashville and Winnipeg, you know, competing for top spot in that Central Division. So certainly the opponents, three games and four nights there, that's going to be you know, what we like to call big boy hockey. That'll be pretty challenging. And then on top of all that, then to fly again, you know, cross country and to be up in Montreal, as we saw last week, the Canadiens aren't any pushovers this year. So they'll certainly have their hands full with that four-game roadie, but all the more important, and that being said, to take care of the home cooking, as you noted off the top here.
Awesome. Well, that is Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network again. You can catch him every Caps game on the radio from inside Capital One Arena and in studio. You can find him on Twitter at BenRaby31. Ben, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it, and we hope to have you back on here very soon.
Likewise, Jordan. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Once again, that was Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network. Thank you so much to Ben for taking some time to chat with me, especially as this show is in its infancy. I know having tried to reach out to a number of media professionals that cover this team full time, the response has been sort of slow, but I'm so thankful that Ben responded, first of all, and was willing to call in and do the interview with me. He provided a lot of good insight. Obviously, he is one of those guys that gets to spend a good chunk of his time with the team. You know, he's in the locker room. He's talking to guys, getting the lowdown. Really just a wealth of information. And it was awesome to pick his brain a little bit and sort of get some insider info, especially about Phoenix Copley. I know I talked about that position, a backup goalie, with Michael Jenkins in the first episode. But, you know, to me, and I've noted it before, to me, the backup position is just as important as your starter, because obviously the starting goaltender is not going to be able to go all 82 games of the season. So you are going to need a guy who isn't going to be a pushover, a guy that your own players are going to want to go to bat for and put together the best performance they can possibly put together in support of a guy who maybe gets a start or gets called in once every 4 or 5 games at most. So, you know, for Ben to give the lowdown, especially on the goalie prospects that the team is grooming down in Hershey, he made mention of Vitek Vanacek and Ilya Samsonov. Those two guys are splitting time in Hershey right now. And as Ben noted, Copley has a 1-year contract. So, you know, you could see this as more or less a tryout to be the permanent backup goaltender, but I'm sure that probably won't be the case. And as Braden Holtby continues to get a little older, he's 29 now, actually just made his it was the anniversary of his NHL debut. He's been in the league 8 years. 8 years ago, as of this recording, was November 5th. November 5th, he made his NHL debut. And, you know, it's just been a steady progression ever since. I read a great story on The Athletic from Caps beat writer Chris Cook, sort of going into how Braden Holtby has always sort of battled his own mind in tackling his position. It's always been a mental thing. Mental toughness is absolutely key, just as much as physical toughness and being physically fit is for goaltenders. You know, they can get in their own minds, and sometimes they can get in their own way. And, you know, for a guy like Braden, who more or less sees a lot of pressure playing that position, you know, it was interesting to read, get some insight from his coaches, his former coaches, his own dad, and really sort of go into the mind of how he prepares and how he tackles the mindset that he has at his position. But in terms of Phoenix Copley, you know, he's just going to be one of those guys that you're going to have to watch as the season progresses. And obviously, I like that he made mention of Jacob Vrana as one of those guys that's risen to the occasion in Tom Wilson's absence. As he mentioned, the goal production isn't necessarily there. He has 12 penalty minutes, which is probably one of those areas that he noted that Jacob probably needs to work on. You don't want to take penalties or too many penalties. And as I said, he's got 12 pims on the year. And so while he's not leading the team in penalty minutes, you definitely need him on the ice as much as possible when he's out there. You know, you don't want to see the team a man down, because that just, it just isn't good. And you, while you want to have a strong penalty kill, you just try to hope that they don't go man down a lot, because it's just not conducive to wins in my book. But yeah, looking ahead to this slate of schedule here, as we look ahead throughout the month of November, as I talked about with Ben, they finished this five game homestand with a game against the Arizona Coyotes. I wanted to say the Phoenix Coyotes. They'll always be the Phoenix Coyotes to me. I don't care whether they're Arizona or not. But the game against the Coyotes on November the 11th is the final game of this five-game homestand. They'll have a night off or a day off on the 12th. And then on November 13th, they start a four-game road trip in Minnesota. Then they have a back-to-back. They'll go from Minnesota to Winnipeg. They'll have a day off before they head down to Denver and take on the Colorado Avalanche. They'll have 2 days off on the 17th and 18th before they hit Montreal for the second time this season to finish out that road trip. And then they have another day off, and then November 21st, ideally, you know, Thanksgiving Eve will be Tom Wilson Day, as he'll likely be making his season debut for the Caps. That game is at home against the Blackhawks, and then it's a short two-game homestand with the Blackhawks on the 21st, and then the Red Wings come to D.C. on the 23rd. And then the next night, they're up at Madison Square Garden for the first time this season, taking on the dreaded New York Rangers. The Caps won that first meeting of the season back on October 17th, a 4-3 victory in overtime. And then the last week of November, they're taking on the Islanders up at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And then they have a few days off before they take on the New Jersey Devils again. And as I mentioned in the top of the show, they will be looking to avenge a 6-0 shutout that they suffered at the hands of the Devils in Newark last month. And so looking at that stretch of schedule, you know, Minnesota, Winnipeg, Colorado, Montreal, New Jersey, those games are going to be tough. The game against New York, against the Islanders. The Islanders currently in first place. They've surprisingly, gotten off to a good start despite being without John Tavares, who defected to the Toronto Maple Leafs over the offseason. But I do think Chicago, Detroit, New York, those are prime games to win. I think they have just about as good a chance to win those games as the opposition does. The games against Minnesota and Winnipeg are going to be tough, obviously being a back-to-back. Winnipeg, in their own barn, they're so tough. And if you remember last season, toward the end of the season, when they made that trip up to Winnipeg, the Caps had a victory and then blew a two-goal lead in the third period. And that just – it was super deflating. But, you know, Winnipeg has – you know, they haven't gotten off to the best start, but – you definitely don't want to overlook the Jets. Connor Hellebuck in net and Patrick Laine, you know, just one of the top players in the league, and always a formidable opponent in Winnipeg. But I think looking throughout the month of November, they can definitely use this month to try and build some momentum. Really sort of establish themselves as that contender, and obviously use these games to improve, steadily improve, work on things that they need to work on, and hopefully just stay healthy. You know, that is ultimately what you want to see out of these guys at this point in the season. You know, I like to think the first at least 4 or 5 games of the regular season is sort of an extended arm of the preseason. Because the preseason is sort of short, you know, they play that stretch of 5 or 6 preseason games within like 2 weeks. And, you know, training camp is only but like 3 weeks or a month or something like that. So it really isn't a lot of time. And then, You know, they had the odd schedule where they would have back-to-backs and then have like 4 days off and then go back and play a back-to-back. But now the schedule starts to normalize a little bit, and, you know, hopefully these guys continue to find a rhythm. And, you know, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. And so, you know, we just only hope that they continue to play like it and, you know, continue to make that march toward the end of the season and get the best playoff seeding possible. But, you know, we're in November. We don't want to think too far ahead. You know, there's still plenty of hockey to be played. And I look forward to discussing more of that as the season rolls on. And again, hoping to bring on more guests. We'll see what happens. But I think this is a good time to wrap things up. I want to thank you very much for listening. Again, feel free to listen to the first episode, sort of the season preview. I really enjoyed my interview with Michael Jenkins of NBC Sports Washington. And even in this episode, again, thank you so much to Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network for taking the time to chat. I thought that interview was awesome, too. And I hope to bring you more of this as the show moves forward. So once again, thank you very much. Follow me on Twitter at J_Bondurant. And you can find me on Facebook, Jordan Bondurant Sports. And yeah, continue to listen to this show here on FoxSportsRichmond.com. I look forward to bringing you another episode in the very near future. And let's go Caps. And I will talk to you next time.
Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.